From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Village in the Park in Daly City.
Potrero Hill.
Glen Park.
South Beach.
I live in Bernal Heights.
Coming up, we'll visit a San Francisco unemployment center to hear about the realities of being out of work in the city.
Finding a long-term job in this city is next to impossible. In the next 3 months, I'll probably have to move. And I've lived here my entire life.
Then we put on our dancing shoes and learn about some classic American music that's finding new fans.
When I really love a soul song, I will clutch my chest and I will roll my eyes like in the back of my head. It's just a religious experience for me.
Preach. And a former Air Force fighter delivers a message to his descendants.
I don't ever want them to feel less than.
We're getting to the soul of things today on Cross Currents. Last December, a federal financial aid program that supplements state support to the unemployed expired. That has translated into more than 1.5 million jobless Americans going 2 months without federal unemployment benefits. Since then, the Senate has failed to agree on how to fund the program going forward. Meanwhile, here in San Francisco, we actually have the third lowest unemployment rate in all of California's counties. But while that's good news, it doesn't mean that much if you're one of the more than 23,000 San Franciscans who are still finding it difficult to get work. KALW's Liz Mack went to an unemployment center to talk with the people on the hunt.
The unemployment center on Turk Street in San Francisco opens at 8 a.m., but before business hours even begin, a line forms out on the sidewalk. Once you go inside, you're greeted by friendly employees. They can help you find your way around the center, but if you have a specific question about your unemployment claim, they probably won't be able to help you. People call this place the EDD, short for Employment Development Department, but that's actually not accurate. This is the place where you go to connect with the EDD.
Hey there.
Cubicles fill the room. Some have a computer for online job searching. Many contain just a phone.
I find the system to be something maybe like what Bulgaria had in the 1950s.
Robbie Sox is here today to deal with his unemployment claim.
It's really an archaic, kind of old system. The phone numbers you call don't make sense. You can never talk to a real person.
The staffers here can't actually help him. Instead, they direct him to the phones, which automatically dial the Employment Development Department. He says he comes to the center to make the call because he can't connect otherwise. Even here, it can take an hour or two just to get through. The EDD is short-staffed, and ever since the sequester last year, their hours have been cut dramatically. Now, the lines are only open for 4 hours every weekday.
This morning I got here about 8:30, and what time is it now? 10:30. So 2 hours, and I've accomplished this. Pretty much a steady diet of recordings and, you know, pressing buttons.
That's Larry. I found him by the phones, where he's been dialing into the system since he arrived this morning.
It is probably easier to get a hold of President Obama than it is to get a hold of someone at EDD.
Larry didn't want to share his last name with me. He's 41, and he's lived in San Francisco for the past 16 years. He's been to the EDD before.
This is my second time being unemployed within, like, the past 3 years, so I'm familiar with the process here.
For most of his career, Larry's been a paralegal. He worked at an e-commerce company before losing his job 3 months ago. He's here to call into the EDD because he hasn't received his benefits.
We are currently receiving more calls than we can answer. Please listen to this message. If you are calling to certify for benefits...
This is a typical day at EDD. Typical day. I mean, it's like you have to just have you smile about it and have a positive attitude about it because this is going to happen. And, I'm hungry right now, and I kind of have to pee. But I don't want to leave this chair. Uh-oh. Oh, my God. Somehow this hung up. Oh, damn. Oh, God. I hope that doesn't put me back to the end of the queue or something, because I've been here. You saw me. I've been sitting here for
After talking to some EDD employees, Larry gets back on the phone.
Right. But it's now like almost February and I'm broke and I'm borrowing money from friends to eat.
Okay.
I meet Adam Dillon and his wife Marissa while they're waiting in line for the phones. He's here today to check out his unemployment claim. He says he hasn't received his benefits in over 4 months. That's $4,500 in back payments.
I've had good union-paying jobs with full benefits, medical, dental, and trying to find a good-paying job that I used to have, making $44 an hour, $50 an hour, I cannot find anymore.
Before he became unemployed 2 years ago, Dillon was an engineer. He's worked hard to get where he was in his career and says his pride took a hit when he lost his job.
The pain of, I guess it has a lot to do with the mental. It just kind of feels physical. You get fatigued. You just don't know what to do with yourself. You know, you just don't want to do anything but work. You just want to get back into your old routine, such as wake up at 4 a.m, you know, have your coffee, get back on the road, get to work. Take care of what you have to take care of.
It's tough. You know, we're both San Francisco natives. You know, we've grown up in the city and worked in the city all our lives. And they're very quick to hire out-of-towners, you know, transplants. But, you know, we've lived here all our lives, worked here all our lives, and it's kind of a slap in the face.
Another person waiting for the phones is Ramsey Abramelli. After working for the same company for 17 years, he was laid off on New Year's Eve 2012.
I'm 40. I'm blue collar. And I only have one thing on my resume, one job on my resume. And that's a job now that most people that are 18 to 25 are working.
To get by, Abramelli's had to sell his computer and his phone. He used to live in Soma, but can't afford to pay the rent anymore. He just moved to a cheaper but illegal unit in Hunters Point.
Finding a long-term job in this city is next to impossible. So, I mean, my options in the next 3 months, I'll probably have to move. And I've lived here my entire life.
Just 3 years ago, Abramelli had $30,000 in the bank. He was thinking about buying a house. Now, he struggles to pay for food. After going to the EDD, he said he was planning to walk to a nearby food pantry for free groceries.
I've had days where I've, like, been in tears. But, I mean, like, I just keep piling through it. Because it's like, I'm smart, I'm intelligent, I'm healthy. I get up every day and I'm always looking. That's a good way of saying it. I'm plugging every single hole in the canoe that I'm in. And that's all I can do.
Like a lot of unemployed people, Abramelli will keep coming back to the EDD. Because he has to. But during every visit, he'll hope this time is the last. In San Francisco, I'm Liz Mack for Cross Currents.
If you're currently unemployed, we'd like to know how your job hunt is going. Give us a call on our tip line and leave a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Keeping your head up while you're hunting for work isn't always easy. Putting your heart and soul into a job and not getting credit for it can be just as hard. The film 20 Feet from Stardom, which just won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature, shines a spotlight on the female singers who sang backup to the biggest soul and rock legends during the 1960s. Darlene Love, a singer profiled in the documentary, received the award to a standing ovation.
Lord God, I praise you, and I am so happy to be here representing the ladies of 20 Feet from Stardom.
For many singers like Love, no matter how talented they were, so many didn't gain stardom during the 1960s soul scene. And because not every singer made it big, a surplus of soul records in America started gathering dust.
At the same time, English disc jockeys were coming to America, searching for new music to bring back home. The songs they found inspired what some consider the very first rave culture, a dance movement called Northern Soul. KALW's own Ashley Ann Krigbaum is a record collector and DJ who's been spinning soul records in Bay Area clubs for the past 5 years. She recently partnered with NPR Music to launch an online archive of Northern Soul tracks, making these mostly unknown songs accessible anytime to a worldwide audience. I asked Ashley Ann to tell me more about how this underground scene began.
The dance floors would be packed with people spinning and doing really crazy moves. And usually until like 4 to 6 a.m., they would call these nights all-nighters, and they would just be dancing to really fast soul music the whole night through. Though a lot of people credit Northern England being the place where these dance nights and this kind of like underground soul appreciation culture started, it definitely inspired different dance nights around the UK. And so there would be cities that would have their own, they'd call them like soul clubs. And they'd have like logos and patches and their own kind of, not turf wars, but there was definitely a sense of ownership of your soul community, of your nights that you would go to that were local. But there are still people even 40 years later who, you know, we're there at the very beginning who are still kind of doing these nights, these all-nighter sort of weekend parties for themselves. I feel like in a lot of ways the term Northern Soul doesn't actually inform how soul records are played now. I mean, it's a term that a lot of DJs who currently play soul music or have over the years, they can understand and they know the meaning behind it. But I know so many DJs, especially right now in the Bay Area, who find that term problematic because it's a term that's born out of a foreign appreciation of American music, where here we're just saying we love these songs.
What is it about soul music that draws you?
For me, soul music, it's one part the lyrics, because so many of my favorite soul songs are really dealing with these kind of profound musings on heartbreak that are one part really raw, but at the same time almost celebratory of the fact you're having these deep, sad realizations that they're sad songs you can dance to. The soul music that I love the most usually has a really big beat to it, something
you know, a sound that my body responds to and can dance to. And so there's always this moment of I will clutch it. When I really love a soul song, I will clutch my chest and I will roll my eyes like in the back of my head and just smile and dance. And there's a feeling of, I don't know, it sounds silly, but it's the closest. It's just a religious experience for me.
You want to give her the best, and you want me to take the rest. Can't you see that I need all of you? You want me to sit on my lawn until you come home. But baby, I've got better things to do. Cause suddenly I woke up and realized my hang up. Although I love you, baby, I realize I love me too. Oh yeah, baby, baby. All you gotta do is love me and treat me right, and you can have it. Oh, I love.
So how do you pick what goes on the stream that people listen to? And what's the value of listening to little known music?
A big part of it was making sure it just sounded really good as a radio producer standpoint. But then as a DJ, I just wanted to make sure that the songs really reflected the style of upbeat, up-tempo soul music you would hear in San Francisco on a dance floor, because that's the whole viewpoint that I had for the stream, that this was an appreciation of soul music coming from the Bay Area. And I wanted the songs to represent the ones that I had heard, not just from my own collection, but from other DJs whom I really love and admire here in the Bay Area.
Want to hear some soul music in San Francisco? Shimmy on over to our website. You'll find links to upcoming dance parties and to Ashley Ann's 24/7 stream of Northern soul music, all at klw.org. Click on Cross Currents.
You don't have to be good looking, baby. Don't have to be no beauty queen. If you got just a
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Now it's time for your stories. This is San Francisco StoryCorps. The soulful music we just heard was recorded in the 1960s. That's the time when Nathan Baxter, an African-American man from Pennsylvania, traveled to the South after his time in the Air Force. Nathan learned many lessons during and after his service, one of which was how difficult it could be to be a black man in the 1960s South. He dropped by a Mobile StoryCorps booth in Oakland to share some never-told experiences with his descendants.
Okay, I'm Nathan Baxter. Well, I'm going to try to tell the story so that my grandkids will understand who I am. And it's going to involve a lot of racism. I get drafted by the Army in 1961. And I decided I didn't want to go in the Army. I wanted to go in the Air Force. So I went and signed up for the Air Force. So I wound up on this base. I got all kinds of bad vibes about it. Every day I got to go into the orderly room with Sergeant Golf and Captain Knapp. And I got to listen to them talk about Martin Luther King and calling him the N-word and
shadow we stand today.
The hatred that's going on in the South, and they're blaming the Northerners. And I hear this every day.
Frustration and discord are burning in every city, North and South.
My back got hurt doing, like I say, grunt work. And when I hurt my back, they took me off duty. And as soon as the doctor released me to go back on duty, I never told nobody this, but they gave me an honorable discharge and told me that they were not going to allow me to stay on this base. One day, the Sergeant Golf packs me up. They pack me up. They don't give me enough money to go home. I'm in Georgia. And instead of taking me downtown and putting me on a bus, they drive me to the gates. And then when they get out of the gate, Sergeant Golf calls me the N-word, told me I told you I was going to get you, and throws my bags out of the Jeep and puts me out and drives back on the base and leaves me standing there with my bags. I get to the bus station, then I find out I ain't got enough money to go home. For 3 nights, I had to stay in an abandoned car that my buddy Aaron Tarver had stuck in a swamp of old Buick. And I had to sleep in this Buick, and every night I had to worry about the Klan riding through, because every time I saw headlights, I ducked down because I'm in the swamp. The car is stuck, and I can't move it. But I thought Sergeant Golf was sending the Klan to get me. I really did. I thought he purposely made sure I didn't have enough money to get home so they could hang me. So I spent 3 days worrying about being hung by the Klan. When I finally got home, I was nutty as a fruitcake, to say the least. I wound up doing a lot of drinking, and I never was comfortable with relationships with people. I didn't trust people. And then the military tells me that this was not combat, so I shouldn't have suffered from PTSD as a result of being in the swamp worried about the Klan every night. So I started going to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and May the 24th, 1980, I got sober. I've been sober ever since. The only reason I'm talking about it now is because I want my descendants to know whatever they have, it came at a price. Somebody paid a price. And I don't ever want them to feel less than. See, the thing that's apparent in my life is nobody can pull me down. I'm the only one that can bring me down. No other human being can take me out of my comfort zone. You know, it's like that old saying, you can't lead where you don't go. You can't teach what you don't know. You can't be what you are not. And you can't give away what you ain't got.
That story was produced by Todd Whitney. Nathan Baxter recorded his story with San Francisco StoryCorps, and you can too. Find out how at klw.org and click on Cross Currents. That wraps up today's edition of Cross Currents. The team includes David Boyer, Jeremy Donlas, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Liz Pfeffer, Stephen Short, and Mary Willis. Today's show was produced by Audrey Dilling and engineered by Seth Samuel. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio.
A summer afternoon warms the bodies that stand at my door. These guests beam as they welcome their hosts to make more of my home, yeah.
This is the Christopher Eumanns Band from Berkeley. They play on Friday night at the Subterranean Art House, also in Berkeley. Doors open at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Smell of a girl whose artwork is better. She came to me a long time ago to show me to live in this picture show we call life. What can this be, yeah, this drawn-out squeeze on our long talk, this hurt?